Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 28.
Getting all breathy there.
I know.
I'm getting kind of steamy in here.
I know. And we are brought to you by Powerade Zero, the thirst quencher with elevated flavor and zero calories.
I hate to break it to you. I'm drinking Coke Zero right now.
Don't tell them that. We need those We need those sponsorship dollars. All of them.
Are you getting paid for this? Fucking Jesus.
Oh, you didn't get your half yet?
Maybe you did. You're not telling me.
Well, that fancy toilet paper ain't buying itself.
That's true. That'd be some really fancy toilet paper if it could buy itself.
It's gilded. Nothing like wiping your ass with some gold toilet paper.
Yep. I think that sounds like a villain in in Riccio. Have you seen Riccio? The story of Ricky?
No.
You would love it. It's a terrible B movie that came out of China based on a comic, and it's like absurdly ridiculously violent, and the effects are, I don't know, they're like made by children. It's kind of awesome.
What kind of children?
I'm not gonna say like, you know, really developmentally disabled, but a little special.
Special children?
Yeah, a little special.
Like Forrest Gump?
Yeah, exactly. Like high functioning, they might have gone on to do pretty incredible things. They all probably met the president of China, just like Forrest Gump.
President of China,
yeah, that's a thing, right?
Sure, absolutely. Space emperor of China,
yeah, exactly. They had to have they hooch and towed it somewhere, but yes, it's an incredible film made by weird, strange children. I recommend it to you. You would, since you like bad movies so much.
I like some of them. It really has. There is a very, like, you need a good formula.
Mm-hmm.
It's like alchemical.
This one's a delight.
Okay. Well, Eric's already started, but we'll officially go in with checking in.
Well, I'm not checking in with that. I haven't watched Riccio in probably half a dozen years.
Okay, well, what do you have to check in with this week, Eric?
Did I talk about Cryptonomicon much? I don't think I did.
You did not?
I've been reading it for a while.
How is it?
It's pretty damned good. It's going to be going on forever. It is as long as Game of Thrones, and I only can listen to the audiobook, you know. I can't just listen to it all day, but it's like 45 hours or something. It's going to take me a while to plug through it, but it's pretty excellent. It's told in like two or three different time periods, and a lot of it is like historical fiction about the World War II era codebreakers, like Alan Turing. It's really cool. I've always been fascinated with Turing, and you know, they talk about like the math and the concepts behind the code breaking, and you know, Turing building like his giant like integrated circuits and the machines that he made back then. I mean, it's just like, it's super nerdy. It's so awesome. I really, really like it. It's pretty special. I think I'm becoming quite a fan of Neal Stephenson.
Is it better than Snow Crash?
Yeah, it's a lot more like Anathem, which was the first book of his that I read, and It I think stands up as one of my all-time favorite like science fiction books at this point. And I think taking inspiration from that, I've been digging through all my computer crap and doing all kinds of goofy stuff. Like I'm trying to build a machine that's like dedicated to running DOS games for no good reason. I don't know if you've played like DOS era games recently, but they're not really well designed. Not compared to what you're used to.
No, most of them aren't.
Do you know what I played the other day? Because I was so excited to like just for the nostalgia value, it was Warcraft 2.
Yeah, okay.
It is horrible. And it's just like it really just the controls, it has not aged well. Like, it's really hard to play.
There's people who are trying to, I think, on the Blizzard team are actually trying to, they're trying to get both 1 and 2 redesigned to run on modern machines.
Well, they'll probably put it on goodoldgames.com if you're talking about, like, just the old version. You know, not, like, redoing it.
No, that's what they're doing. Huh.
Okay.
They're
remastering it.
Yes, basically.
They're basically building the same game again.
Yeah, I think so.
That I can get behind, because it's bordering on unplayable. It's so hard to play.
I remember playing at one point, and it wasn't terrible. It was just, you know, aged. It was dated, but, I mean, it wasn't awful. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just, like, navigating around on the map is, like, really difficult. It just scrolls crazy, and I don't know. I didn't have the patience for it. I beat one stage, and I'm like, ugh. This is, ugh. Well,
if you don't, it's really only good for nostalgia purposes. I mean, there's many, yes, many, many better RTSs at this point.
No, I mean, that's true. I mean, RTS has really changed a lot to where it's, you know, a fast-paced game, and it's people are competitive at it, and back then they kind of didn't know what they were doing. It's just like you've got little people and you tell them to do things, and they, when you click on them, they say funny stuff. that was the whole concept of Warcraft 2. I just pitched it.
You did, you're right. That's mm-hmm. Everything. Well there's also orcs.
Yes, I didn't mention the word orcs.
That's important.
That's where Chris Metzen is a genius.
Just orcs.
Actually, I think people hate Chris Metzen. I don't know.
I've never heard that name before in my entire life, so.
He was one of the creative directors or whatever back during that era. I think he might have, after Warcraft 3, left the company. I'm not sure about that. You know the story about the Phantom hard drive, don't you?
The one you found in your closet?
Yeah. That I found. I mean, it's not even that it's like it's a high performance drive that I obviously paid extra for. You know, like it's a low capacity, high speed drive that I bought for some purpose, and it's just been sitting around. And I almost broke it too. Like I put it in my external to see what in the hell it was, and I'm trying to hook it up to a different machine. And I drop it, and then on the way down, in an attempt to catch it, I slap it down to the ground.
That's
so my external enclosure and this hard drive just fall on the ground, and I'm like, fuck, well, that's the end of those things. But it's just so well made. So if you want to slap your hard drives around, I recommend Western Digital Black. It's very good.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. I generally try not to destroy equipment.
Hey, man, it was not intentional. I'm saying that it takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Well, that's the same test I put babies through. I drop them accidentally and then slap them down on the ground.
I mean, you should hit them with claw hammers. That's the way to do it.
Claw hammers?
Claw hammers.
That'll be our second official sponsor.
Claw hammers? Claw hammers. It's like that awesome hammer that you used to have in your house that looked like it was from Star Wars.
I still have it.
Yes, but I'm referring to a time that's not now. I don't know what happened to it since then.
Yes, I had it, and I still do have it.
Good. been tacking up a lot of drywall?
Not lately.
Okay.
Why?
I'm just curious.
Okay. No, I haven't.
Okay. That's probably
I left good. A life behind.
Okay. The life of a contractor.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Why don't you check in?
Well, thanks for asking, Eric. I am
so curious.
I have two things. One, I saw Thor 2.
How was that? I hear that's a film.
You're right.
That's so good.
It's good that you're keeping abreast of current social and political mm-hmm. things. It's a film. It's a sequel to the first Thor movie.
That's a good order for those.
Yeah, this is Thor. Officially, it's called Thor the Dark World. Thor 2 is easier to say. It takes place after the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
We see Malekith, the Dark Elf, who's actually in the Thor comic book arc.
I was going to say, we saw that little split-faced guy.
Yeah. In a... He is trying to reclaim this weapon and bring darkness to the whole world. I mean, it's you know,
sounds like a movie plot.
Yeah, it's a movie plot. But we see, you know, Natalie Portman as Jane Foster. She gets infected with this liquid weapon, liquid darkness. I don't know. And then Malekith basically is like brings the fight to Asgard and then to Earth. Then Thor has to recruit Loki to help him. It's really good. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
It's not. I mean, the plot isn't mine. I mean, it's a superhero movie plot, but it's the. I mean, it's a nice balance of humor and action and drama, where you know it's not. It's like I would relate. It's very closely in feel to the Avengers.
Okay.
Where, you know, you get big action scenes, mm-hmm. and then you get, you know, levity, but then there's also, you know, a little bit of drama and you know, heavy moments.
My question is this. Does it leave ample jumping off points for Thorky slash?
Yes. Okay. It does.
That's really the important thing.
It's a lot of that. There's a lot of, like, a lot of Thor Loki moments. In this, so you can write all of the slash you want to your heart's content.
Boy.
Yeah. I would recommend it. I mean, I've heard a lot of mixed, all the reviews I've read, like, you know, from critics have said they've liked it, but then I've heard a lot of people I know are very, some people love it, some people really hate it. So I don't know what to think. I really liked it a lot. I think it's my second favorite solo film behind Captain America.
What did these people think of the original Thor?
I don't know.
The ones that disliked it.
I don't know if they liked the original one. I assume they liked it because they went and saw the second one.
Right. Well, I mean, more people see sequels than the first film.
That's true.
So I think as like all this... You know, these Marvel sequels and Avengers, you know, it's just going to build and build and build.
Yeah, that's true. It's not offensive in any way. It's 2 hours long, but it doesn't seem like it at all. It moves quick. It's a lot of fun. Everything I want in a superhero movie. Of course, I'll probably like.
Well, I just.
Go ahead.
Right. No, I was just going to say, I just wonder what people's expectations were. If they were expecting, like, some kind of incredible, like, Citizen Kane, the superhero movie.
I don't think so. I hope not.
The original Thor was kind of it was a little bit dumb. It was fun. I enjoyed it. You know, it wasn't without its problems. I mean, it was a movie.
I like this one a lot better than the first Thor.
Yeah?
A lot better, yeah. It didn't have to waste a lot of time on exposition about Asgard and all these relationships.
Right.
It's just assumed, and then it gets a lot faster, too. And you get a little bit more about all the supporting characters, all the supporting Asgardians. You get a little bit more info on them. And
excellent.
Other thing I want to check in with is I mentioned this on the podcast a while ago, maybe a couple months ago. It was Pull List.com, which is a curated monthly comic book site. They'll send you... I signed up for the first month, October, and they sent me my book a couple weeks ago, and it's called I Kill Giants. Have you ever heard about that, Eric?
I have not.
It is written by Joe Kelly with art by J.M. Ken Nimura. And it's really good. I'm glad that I wasn't sure about what they would send me. I was really dreading that they'd send me something I already had. But this is Joe Keating's selection. He curated the first month. There's only a couple days left to sign up for November. I think it's like $20. And they send you a curated book. But this one is I Kill Giants, about this teenage girl. It's like she's, I think, 13 or something. She's the, like, most awkward, nerdy girl who thinks she's, like, a giant killer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really her way of coping with this kind of... She's having these heavy familial problems. And, you know, there's this bully. And, you know, it's kind of a typical kind of growing up story. And also her coping with, you know, heavy familial issues. But it's really touching, really good. The art's really nice. It's kind of a heavy manga influence on it. It's really the way they kind of differentiate her character from everyone is, and they never really even mention it, is that everyone in this book it's like normal people, but then she has these weird animal ears, just randomly, like giant like bunny rabbit ears kind of, and no one ever notices, no one ever says a word about it, but it really like serves as a way to like differentiate her. See how much of an outsider she is at her school and everything like that. But it's a really good book. I would definitely suggest it, and I'm gonna sign up for November. I'd definitely suggest everyone check out pulllist.com. It's a really interesting way to get new comic books. I think I'd heard about this once before, but I probably forgot about it just as quick. So getting it is really good.
You have to buy it month to month.
You can either buy it, I think, a 3-month installment, and it's cheaper, you know, per month if you do it that way. I just didn't want to invest for 3 months if I didn't enjoy the first one. So I might next time I do it, I might just re up for several months in a row.
Is there like a Netflix survey?
No. It's just basically they have a comic book creator. Mm-hmm. Who just will pick a book and they'll send that to you with a little note from him saying why he picked it and, you know, what he thinks about it. And, you know,
so he picks it for everyone. Yes. That signs up.
Yes.
Okay.
But that was as pulllist.com, I Kill Giants by Joe Kelly and J.M. Ken Nomura. And that's all.
Oh, ho.
That's all I have.
That's everything.
That's everything I have to check in with. And I think that will bring us right into, I know this is Eric's favorite part of the week, and it certainly is in contention for my favorite part of the week, and that is weekly floppies.
Oh goodness. What does it contend against?
Board game nights?
It's no contest.
I knew you'd say that.
Did you know I was going to say those exact words?
Something along those lines.
Why are you a witch?
I'm not a witch. I have a psychic transmitter implanted in your brain.
Ugh.
Good luck digging it out now.
I'll dig it out with a claw hammer.
We're starting off this week with not one, but two indie books. I thought we'd be a little audacious this week.
I know. We're doing six whole books.
Woo! Starting off with Umbral, number one, written by Anthony Johnson. I hate it when books can't just call people writers and artists. They have to use...
Yep. I noticed that.
But I'm guessing pencils by Christopher Mitten, maybe colors by John Rausch, with letters by Thomas Maurer. They've been called...
No, he did flourishes.
Yes, it's scribe, illuminator, painter, and flourisher, whatever the hell that means.
Yep.
But aside from that, I liked this book. How do you feel about this, Eric?
You know, I liked it okay. I do think that there need to be more fantasy comics, but I'm not terribly connecting to any of the characters yet. Like, so many people have just died, and that's the yes. whole hook of this book, you know? And I kind of feel like we're supposed to, like, just sort of by default connect with this girl as the main character here. And I have no real emotional attachment to this yet. So it just sort of feels like a little bit like generic fantasy story in comic book form. It's not exactly generic. Magic items, she steals it, there's monsters, she runs away, things die. It's good, but nothing about it is, like, overwhelmingly amazing. Like, I'm piqued, and I think that it might, after a couple of issues, be really solid, but I think this could have been tightened up a little bit more.
I enjoyed it. The story is... I'll go into a little bit more detail than Eric did about the listing of the inventory. There's a thief, a female thief. She's friends with the prince. She wants to steal him. She's a member of the Thieves Guild, apparently. And she's trying to steal a magic item. And then shit hits a fan and monsters appear, kill the royal family. And I have to kind of agree with you about the connection. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of... Her name is Rascal, which I...
No, that's pretty rad. That's a good name. I like that.
Yeah. And then... But there's so much focus on the action. Like, most of this story is about the monsters appearing and, like, murdering people and them running away and trying to avoid the monsters and all that. That you don't get any kind of characterization, anything unique to any of mm-hmm. these characters that would make you feel connected to them.
Yeah, and that's the mistake that a lot of storytellers make is it's... You know, like, they've been inside their head with these characters for so long, and they're so connected to them, they don't spend the time making us care about them enough to want to go forward with the story. And without that, that just comes off as very generic.
Yeah, that's... I really like the art.
I enjoy it. It reminds me of P. Craig Russell. I don't think it's quite as rich as that. I don't think it's, like, inferior, necessarily. I just kind of place P. Craig Russell as a top-tier artist. Get a little bit of From Hell, actually. Who's the artist that does From Hell?
Eddie Campbell?
Yeah.
Australian artist.
Something about it reminds me of that. I don't necessarily think that's a big influence on him. It's just... Just has some hallmarks that seem similar to me. Not my favorite art, but I think it could give this, like, a unique sort of cohesive look. I like the way that they've, you know, began creating this world, and I'd like to see them see us several issues through. Although I guess this artist, probably for the interior, is one of the creators of this.
Yeah, like, this is a collaboration.
He and the writer, like, they're credited as... the concept creator, so I can't imagine him moving away from it.
No, this is really I know I've read a little bit about this coming up, and it's basically it's a finite story, but it's quite. I mean, it's like 50 or 60 issues. I think they have in mind if they can go that long. And yes, I imagine they'll have the same creative team the entire time.
Okay, now that would be good. I don't know. Did you have more to say about it? Because I'm.
No, it's not. It's. I mean, it is. Again, like Eric said, it is nice seeing, dark fantasy comics. There's not a tremendous amount.
Right.
A tremendous mm-hmm. amount of them coming out on a weekly basis, and
I think it's a genre that's just here. Really
I'm
just underrepresented.
Well, I think most genres are really underrepresented in comics, actually. I mean, aside from superhero books,
right.
are obviously overrepresented, but everything else is, there's not enough, you know,
mm-hmm.
they're certainly not equal to everything else. I think maybe crime comics are probably
mm-hmm.
second now, I would think. I'm trying to think of... That's they hit a real resurgence in the 2000s and takeoffs on crime comics. But I'm a buy on this. I think on its potential and you know, on it's worth checking in and seeing how much you like it.
I'm sort of teetering on a weak buy to a not buy. I think that... I agree, it shows promise two or three issues in, but I really think they should have tightened this at first issue up a little bit more. I don't know. It's probably worth seeing where it's going. We can call it like a it's like a D minus buy. Yeah.
Barely passes. So that was Umbral number one. We are both buys.
Yeah.
Even if they are D minuses.
You're like a C plus, I think.
So next up we have I thought this was a really intriguing comic, so I wanted to make sure we read it and see what it was all about. This is Valiant's Unity number one, their mm-hmm. first like their big team book. Like this is their attempt at making a team book written by Matt Kent. I can't find a credits page, so it's by Matt Kent, Doug Braithwaite, and Brian Reber. Those are the people's names that are on the front cover. I'm sure there's a credits page somewhere in this book, but I can't find it. This is Valiant's attempt at a team book, trying to take down Exo Manowar, who's basically just decided that he's taking Romania back. He's man abducted by aliens, taken a super armor suit, and has returned to Earth 1,300 years later, wanting to reclaim his homeland, which is Romania. And now there's the super team is being put together to try and stop him. What'd you think about this, Eric? I'm curious.
Well, a lot of these books this time, this book included. I mean, I felt like I was a silver alert. I was just, like, so confused. I'm like, who the hell are all these people? What the hell's going on? That being said, this book was fun.
Yeah.
But, like, everything you just said is complete news to me.
It's on the recap page.
I mean...
You did not read the recap page?
I mean, I did, but...
I mean, that's everything I just said, all that is on the recap page.
I mean, that's fine, and I got that, but something about it... Like, I just couldn't follow it terribly well. Like I said... I think I had a stroke earlier today. Maybe that's the real problem.
You might want to check it out in the hospital, then.
You think I need to go to the hospital?
Comic book podcasts are not incredibly good at diagnosing and treating strokes.
What podcast would you recommend for treating my stroke?
Welcome to Night Vale.
That sounds good.
I think they can fix you up.
There's no blood on this desk.
But this is a little bit of a spoiler if you haven't read this book. But I really like it, mainly because you see the team fucking utterly fail.
Mm-hmm.
In the worst way possible. Like, nearly everyone is killed. quickly.
They're all completely slaughtered.
Yeah, there's four members of the or I guess five members of the team. Four of them are doing a frontal assault. Two of them are dead before they hit the ground. Which I think is the last book that really endeared me to that was this is going back to the Ultraverse. You remember the Ultraverse, Eric?
The Ultraverse?
It's the Ultraverse. It was the 90s conceit by Malibu Comics.
But, no.
Okay, but there's a guy named Hardcase. Okay. And his first issue is him flashing back to his, like, member of this team, and everyone but him gets brutally murdered. And this reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an interesting conceit, because you're like, you gives you an idea, like, oh, this is the team, and we're knowing all these new people, and then suddenly they're all dead. I always like it when that happens.
You like it when everyone dies?
Well, it's just like it brings up a dynamic that you don't see a lot in books, like, complete and utter failure of, like, the Avengers and the Justice League. Even if they fail, you go, oh, they didn't really fail.
They weren't all completely wiped out.
They weren't murdered ridiculously in, like, right in front of your face.
Yes.
So, this, with these characters that aren't, like, as established as any of the characters in Marvel or DC, you know, it doesn't bother me if they die, and it makes an interesting dynamic for the story of the book. Because now they have to regroup and get new people. These people have apparently been training for years and years and years of this moment, and then die.
Well, they immediately after, they're like, whatever, we got more.
That's true.
They were stupid. We always sent them in because they'd go.
But I like the art. It's dynamic, tells the story very well. It's comic booky, but not in a way that I dislike. What do you think about the art?
In terms of the art, it's it's very photorealistic, and I think it lacks a little bit of character. You know, it's kind of like, you know what it actually kind of makes me think of is He-Man, the He-Man cartoon show. Yeah. A lot of people have the same body type, and it's kind of got that sort of lacking character to it. It's by no means bad. I think that the Photoshop colorist is really the one sort of bringing the heat in this book. Everything else is just sort of photorealism and drawing from a lot of photo reference and stuff that's not terribly exciting to me. But I mean, you know, it works. It's just a little sterile in my view.
Okay.
But there's some nice stuff in it. The action scenes are pretty excellent.
Yeah, and there is a scene where a guy's head is blasted off of his body and through the body of another person.
Yeah, it becomes a projectile and it goes through a second guy. That's effing hardcore.
So don't mess with Exo Manowar. He will shoot your head through another person's body.
Yeah, you back away from that scenario.
You win, Mr. Manowar.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a buy. I like it.
I'm not crazy about it, but I think it's very well done. It's a fun read. I'm intrigued, even though I don't know what in the blue hell is going on here.
So is that a buy?
Yeah, I'm a buy.
It sounds like a buy.
That does sound like a buy. You, sir, are astute. You are exactly one.
I will not suffer those insults on my podcast.
Did you hear that? It's no longer our podcast. It's his. Getting awful grabby there.
Hey, I'm possessive.
Mr. Entitled.
You just did call me astute. Come on.
You're Mr. Exactly one astute.
It is mine and it is yours. And ours. It's yes. Both all of those things.
It is ours.
We're moving over to Marvel. Superior Foes to Spider-Man number 5. Written by Nick Spence. And Eric's just laughing.
Because it's worth laughing at, isn't it?
It is. Written by Nick Spencer. I guess they call it storytelling. I guess this is a collaboration as well. So Nick Spencer and Steve Lieber. Steve Lieber did the art. But I imagine that he had a hand in the story as well. So and then colors by Rachel Rosenberg, letters by Joe Caramagna. This book is incredible. I love this book.
It's certainly getting better, and it was a strong start to begin with. I think it's really starting to gel nicely.
Exactly. I completely agree. You get
talk about bringing all these friggin' obscure characters. The owl?
Yes, who eats rats.
This is some shit that I forgot this was real.
I love the Man-Bull story.
Yeah, it's pretty epic.
Totally. It's like right in the middle of this tense, like, interrogation. This guy has rats. Teeming, swarming rats. Literally, like, above his head. And then we get, like, this comic relief story about Man Bull, like, seducing some lady. Man Bull's, like, one of the most disposable, F-less characters.
How do you think they pitch this book? Like, let's just... Let's take all the... yeah, exactly. Let's take all the C and D list people and make the Venture Brothers with them.
Yes. Pew! It's really heavy on the design. And then we have this... the whole conceit of this book is that they're looking for the head of Silvermane.
Mm-hmm.
And then... they're not stealing something else. Boomerang's... Boomerang's been lying even about that the entire time.
It's pretty special.
Poor Shocker. Poor Shocker.
Ah, he's fine.
I know. I just feel sorry for that dude.
He got ahead in the end.
He did.
You see what I did there?
I see what you did there. The two page spread with them, the layout of the owl's hideout.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. I like that one of the obstacles is just like a mustache dude with nunchucks.
Yeah, I was.
And then a giant lemur, I think. I think that's a lemur on the other side of the bathroom.
I think it's a Beanie Baby.
A giant Beanie Baby? That's also possible.
It's a Beanie Baby. I think the owl looks like he's a web developer. He doesn't look like a crime boss.
Well, he eats rats, so that's enough.
Well, I mean, if those rats are filled with Doritos.
I'm not sure where you get your information about rats. They are not filled with Doritos.
Well, I'm just saying, you change that rat with, like, a bag of Doritos, and that guy's ready to code. No additional skills necessary. You look like that, and you eat Doritos. You were like a professional web developer.
These opinions and thoughts are Eric's and Eric's alone. I'm sure all web developers are out there are classy.
I'm sure all of them reading this book are like, hey, I'm in this book.
Stately, again, these are Eric's thoughts alone. I do not share them. I love everyone. And do not make any assumptions about if they eat Doritos, if what their occupation is. I enjoy Doritos sometimes, Eric. Am I a web developer?
Maybe when you're eating them. You've never tried writing PHP while eating Doritos, have you? It gives you superpowers.
I haven't done that. It's true. So it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't. The art is still good.
Mm-hmm.
It suits the book. It's incredible layout and design elements as well. And I can't... This is my book of the week by hard. I can't wait till this comes out in trade, because I'll buy that too.
It's a fun read. I like that it exists. It makes me happy. It gives me hope.
Hear that, folks? Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Something you don't hear about.
Why is Silvermane riding around in a lawnmower? I'm so fascinated by that.
That's not a lawnmower. I think that's an RC car.
That's an RC car. That's kind of also very awesome. It's very unclear.
I guess you're right
with a little flag that's got to be the antenna for it.
That's an RC car, which is also, yeah, it's even better. Mm-hmm. Although a lawnmower's not bad.
I think a lawnmower would be good. He's a groundskeeper now.
He retired from crime as a head and just went into mowing football fields.
Yes. And then later he's going to retire, move to Canada, and be mounted on a Zamboni.
Exactly. And he works in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
That's Superior Foes of Spider-Man number 5. We are both hardcore. Well, I'm a hardcore buy. Eric is... You know, a regular buy.
I'll go you one better. I'm a regular buy plus. No, it's a very good book. I'm delighted to have read it.
Our other Marvel book of the week is Savage Wolverine number 11, written and drawn by Jock with colors by Lee Luffridge. This brings us to the end of this little mini arc.
Mm-hmm.
And it went pretty much where I was expecting it to go. But it was still good. I like a little mini Wolverine.
Little baby Wolverine.
A little boy Wolverine that's not Dokken.
Mm-hmm.
God, Dokken is like, I don't think Wolverine's extreme enough. Let's make him more extreme. Give him tribal tattoos. No, it's like a little boy who's also Wolverine's powers, and Wolverine just finally discovers why he's on this planet and what this little boy's up to. But it's, you know, a little nice little end piece on this story, wraps up everything, and actually leaves, you know, a spot for other people to pick up the story if they wanted to.
Yeah, I'm really curious if any of this is going to be in continuity and they're going to introduce this kid as a character.
Maybe eventually. I doubt they'll do it. I doubt it's going to happen anytime soon. But, you know, it's there. And it's certainly not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Because we definitely need more Wolverine knockoffs.
I know. All we have is Dokken and X-23 and Sabretooth and mm-hmm. Lady Deathstrike. And am I missing any? That robot Wolverine that was around in the 90s?
Yes, I know the guy. Yeah. I know who you mean. I have no idea what his damn name is.
No, I don't either. But
are you being bombed?
Yep.
The Ruskies.
And that was a motorcycle.
Man, the Ruskies are invading on motorcycle?
I don't think the Russians are invading at all.
The Ruskies, say it with me.
I'm not saying Ruskies.
You just did.
Whatever. But the art is the same quality as before. I still like it a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more interior. I mean, it's a lot less crazy alien landscapes, so obviously yeah. It's not as interesting. But it's still good.
I don't know that I'd say it's not as interesting. I think it's not as wild. It's tighter.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as crazy and experimental. I think he's doing more just to sort of wrap the story up and tell the story neatly. Which I think I kind of like this, you know, almost more than what he's done before.
Okay.
I thought the first book in particular was a little too loose, but
this is focusing more tightly on characters. So obviously,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's super strong all the way through, though. It's been a nice little arc.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm really enjoying the Savage Wolverine book. I wish I had started reading it earlier with. Him and the Savage Land, and go back and pick up Jim Chung's arc when he comes out of trade. But this is great. So good. Savage Wolverine. Wolverine stories out of continuity. They're good. I'm a buy Savage Wolverine number 11.
Totally buy.
Totes.
Totes buy.
Totes buy. Totes double buy.
Mm-hmm.
And now we jump over to DC.
Do the DC hop. That's the sound it makes.
DC Hop.
These are really weird books for DC.
Well, they're both actually Vertigo books, technically.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess Astro City makes total sense as a Vertigo book. This other book is just very bizarre to me. All right, we're going to talk about it first.
Yeah, this is Federal Bureau of Physics number 5, FBP 5. This is actually... I don't think you know this, Eric, but they had to change the name of this comic after, like, the second or third issue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first issue came out as... It was called Collider.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think someone else had published something under that name and then sued them.
Ah.
So they had to change it to Federal Bureau of Physics. Like, in the second or third issue. So I think they actually republished the first issue with new stuff.
Comic books are... really weird that way. I can't even remember. There was a story in the Sandman companion about how the fourth book of the Sandman almost didn't get written because some idiot other comic writer, I don't even remember who it was, he wanted to write a story about how the devil leaves hell and comes to Earth to kick some ass. When Neil Gaiman wanted to write a story about how the devil is really sick of living in hell and just wants to quit and just be homeless.
Now that you mention it, mention Sandman. We recently read Sandman Overture number 1.
Yes, that is a true statement.
And number 2 was scheduled for, you were hoping that, you know, we'd see it. I had said it was bi-monthly. Mm-hmm. Every 2 months we'd get it. The second issue was scheduled for December 31st.
Uh-huh.
Now it is scheduled for February.
Dicks.
So we're going to be waiting 4 months for the second issue.
This is going to be like Weapons of the Meta Baron. It's going to take 8 years to come out.
Probably.
Or it's going to be like Joss Whedon ruining, what are they called? The Runaways. Yeah. Not that I think his arc was bad, but he just decided not to write it for long periods of time.
Yes. It's astonishing. X-Men run is the same way.
Yeah.
We'll just wait 6 months for an issue.
Yep.
That's fine.
I mean, he's got a lot of upworthy videos about feminism to be in.
Anyway, Federal Bureau of Physics number 5, written by Simon Oliver, art by Robbie Rodriguez and Rico Renzi. Wow, that's a lot of R's. Letters by Jared K. Fletcher. And this is sort of the second arc of this. I don't even know how it's connected to the first arc.
Were you following this before?
No, not really. I mean, I know the premise, which is basically the laws of physics break down, are starting to break down more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And this bureau was created to try and deal with that. But I don't know what happened to precipitate the events of this comic. Of this guy moving in with in his uncle's trailer and then, like, tracing down his father's stuff and learning about what happened to his dad. And I don't know. I mean, the character work is really good. Mm. It's well written.
Yeah.
It just, not a lot happens.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a guy slumming around in a trailer until we get to, like, this flashback scene where we find out what happened to his dad. But I don't dislike it.
Mm-hmm. I think I agree with you that nothing in it's terribly... There's no real hook. There's nothing really pulling you in. I don't know. I think it's a little... It's trying to be a little too mysterious.
Yeah, I don't...
Especially not having read anything. I mean, I knew zero about this.
Well, I read the solicitations for these when I'm, like, trying to pick
No, them. I know.
And it says, oh, now's the perfect time to jump aboard.
Clearly really? Not.
No.
No.
I mean, I don't understand why DC is so averse to putting in recap pages.
Yeah.
Just a one page to explain what happened in the previous books. Anything relevant? I don't know. I don't know. I have to say, don't buy this because I don't see a reason to keep. There's no, like, there's nothing happens at the end to go.
Mm-hmm.
There's no hook at the end. There's no cliffhanger. There's no mystery in this that I go, oh, I need to know the answer.
I'm actually really shocked. Even despite these critiques of it, that you're a don't buy on it.
I mean, it's a nice book, but it doesn't do anything. There's nothing happens.
Hmm.
I mean, at least we have the same kind of points about Umbral, that there's no huge character hook or anything, but there's action. There's a question about magical items and monsters. And this, there's just a dude in a trailer smoking weed with his uncle. And then, like, talking about his dad's death. And then a lady shows up at the end.
Yeah, I didn't even pay any attention to that. That whole page was clumsy. How she's like... It's like, oh, Hispanic women have to be house cleaners? It's like the dumbest possible thing that anyone could have said.
I picked up this book because I assumed, like, oh, well... It's Federal Bureau of Physics. I'm assuming the first arc was about, like, something that introduces the characters in this bureau, or an agent, or something, and they dealt with some physics thing. And the second one is going to be conquering the next physics thing. And instead, they just get some dude in a trailer. I did not get what I expected.
Hmm.
I don't know. Maybe if I had read the first arc, I would be tied. I'd know who this guy was and why he's living in a trailer. Maybe he got kicked out after the first arc of the Bureau. But I don't. There's no context to tell me anything.
To be perfectly, I mean, this is the same situation as Umbral. Very similar.
Well, Umbral's the first issue, so I can.
Yeah, I know. Well, this
I know
is.
There's nothing else.
I totally get that. My interest has kind of peaked on this, and I would consider giving it another issue.
Okay.
I don't know that I would recommend it necessarily to anyone. For all the reasons that you just said. I agree totally with everything that you said. But something about it... Like, I enjoy the art, and even though there's no, like, real powerful hook, I'm curious. Like, I want some answers. And I would give it another book. I don't know that I'd run out and tell everyone to buy it, but
okay. Well, so that means you're a buy?
I'm buy-ish.
Buy-ish?
Yeah. I think technically I have to say no. I'm going to think long and hard about looking at the next one.
Okay.
Because my curiosity is piqued, but everything that you've said is just, you know, dead on.
I just maybe it's also that I gave Umbral a shot because of the setting is more interesting to me than.
Well, I think I mean.
I the idea of a Federal Bureau of Physics is very interesting to me, but they don't talk about it at all.
Well, no, I know.
That's my problem. There's nothing.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
they're,
not.
They're there.
Yeah. So we're not. Don't buy. But buy-ish, maybe?
Yeah, kind of.
I don't know where... It's FBP5, so I don't know where we're at. Lastly, this week, Astro City number 6. And another kind of one... It says it's part 2, but I didn't...
Have you been...
This works perfectly fine as a standalone story.
Yeah, that I would have never thought it was... It does say part 2.
I saw that. I'm like, I didn't realize this was the second part of the story. But then,
I couldn't read that with all the Kirby crackles on that page.
There is a lot of Kirby crackle on that page.
Crackling the shit out of that page.
Yeah. This is Astro City, number 6, written by Kurt Busiek, art by Brent Anderson, colored by Alex Sinclair. It tells a story about this kind of, like, gangster in the city who's having dealings with this the guy that the big interdimensional dude that's appeared in the middle of the city. And he's gotten a hold of some interesting artifacts and is curious about, you know, he's trying to decide what to do with them. And I really enjoyed it. It's really interesting perspective.
I like the way that they tell the stories in Astro City. I remember when we read the first one, you're like, I can't believe you've never read any of this. It really seems like something that you'd like. And I after reading this and reading the second book that we did with the telepath that did like special effects or whatever in the hell she did.
Yes.
I don't know if it's perspective. It's just very different than a lot of different things that I've read. I don't know. It's got sort of a soft touch, kind of like a Neil Gaiman comic, but it's I don't even know how to explain it. It's really enjoyable. Like, I think my favorite thing about it is how there's not some crazy like event in the ending. You know?
This is guy putting, he's like, I'll wait.
Yeah. Like, I honestly think that makes it more interesting.
Well, yeah, I think. I agree.
You can kind of see the wheels turning in the character's head. That he's always,
well, I think,
he's always been this crazy, reckless guy.
Yeah.
And his motto is, if you see an open door, just go through it.
Yeah.
And then
that's
sees
exactly what I was about to say.
Yeah, that he sees this opportunity, and he's like, I think I'm going to wait it out. And I think that actually is more interesting than him, like, taking these things and becoming a supervillain or, you know, becoming whatever in the hell he was planning on doing. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. That really... I was liking it up until that point. And then that happened. I'm like, I did not expect that. That's pretty great, actually.
It's another chapter of Astro City where it's, you know, you're looking through the eyes of a non-participant in, like, they're affected by the superhero power stuff, but they're not in it. Mm-hmm. He's this, like, mobster, gangster guy, you know, and he just kind of, you get an outsider perspective on this weird stuff that's going on. But it's a unique voice, and one that Kurt Busiek, he does a great job at. Every issue we've read has come from someone else's perspective. And he's done a good job at making them unique. And so, you know, their voices don't sound the same, which is hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
He really captures this guy's voice.
Mm-hmm.
As he had with all the other characters who've been narrating their particular issues.
I think that it really stands... It really stands up there with, I think, the best of the Vertigo stuff that I've read.
We need to read the original Astro City.
I think we should.
Volumes.
I think that's a good call. How many are there?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I mean, is it like the Sandman that it's like a spanning years, different volumes?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know that we should read them all in a week.
No.
We shouldn't bone it again.
No, we should not. We should never bone it again.
That was a tough week.
It was. That was a lot of reading. But the art, we haven't mentioned the art, but the art's good. A lot of Kirby crackles.
I think this is the strongest art of the three issues. This is my favorite so far. I think that it's very good. I like the color an awful lot. I like the brushwork and the hatching. I think that who is this artist? I want to get back to the credits page.
Brent Anderson. Yeah.
I like it. I'm very pleased with it.
It's really good.
I should look up this Brent Anderson guy, spend some time with him. Looks like he's done a lot of this Astro City.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Did he do either of the other ones?
Yeah.
Okay. He's done all of them. Then I think that this is better.
And the cover is Alex Ross. They're all Alex Ross. That's like a hallmark of the series.
Yeah.
I know you don't like Alex Ross that much. But.
I'm not a big fan. I mean, I don't. Like, think he's untalented. I just think that he's kind of like the Thomas Kincaid of the comics world.
I was going to make a point. Oh, I read... You remember Coffin Hill, don't you, Eric?
I do remember that book that I don't like.
You don't like that. Coffin Hill 2 came out this week, and I bought it and I read it.
What'd you think?
It's better than the first issue.
That's a good thing. I mean,
I don't think you'll like it. I won't say that you'll like it, okay. But it is better.
Like, you think I will actively dislike it, or you don't know if I'll like it?
I think you'll probably go, it's okay.
Okay.
It's the story is much more straightforward. It makes... Still, there's still... probably moving too fast for its own good.
Right.
But it's more cohesive.
That was actually that was exactly what was wrong with the first book, is it was really trying to do too much. Just, I don't know.
But I just would like to, I wanted to check in and say, you know, if you could always, if someone out there who had, was, you know, wasn't sure about getting the second one, if you were more than 50% when liking the first one, I would say get the second one, because the second one's better.
And this is Coffin Hill, a book that's Coffin not even Hill. On our list.
I didn't think it was worth it, too.
Okay. Well, I kind of agree.
There you go.
But
Astro City number 6, we're both buys on that. Absolutely.
Truly. Excellent. Excellent.
Excellent.
Excellent.
And that will jump us right in to Nerd Boy Book Club.
Just a hop.
A hop. And we are doing God Hates Astronauts by Ryan Brown, written and drawn, and everything. I think, I don't know if he did get, I think he did everything in this.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
It's usually a one-man show.
Yeah, this is originally a webcomic that you can read entirely for free, GodHatesAstronauts.com. Then he did a very successful Kickstarter for it to do it in hardcover, which I have in my hands. Really nice. You get little one-shots at the end.
In hot little hands.
Two-page stories at the end of it, like origin stories of every character that are, of course, ridiculous as hell. You can still get the hardcovers without any of the Kickstarter bonuses at his Etsy page, which I'll link to it. And Image just published the trade paperback of it. So there's three different ways it's out there. But this book is bonkers. Like, the whole premise is like they never go into is that there's I don't know if you remember that movie, Eric, The Astronaut Farmer.
I don't know that one.
You don't even, like, it doesn't even matter.
I don't get the gag.
Yeah, like, that's the whole stupid joke that this base is based on, is that this team, the original team that starts this book,
mm-hmm.
is, they're supposed to be fighting, stopping farmers from launching ships into space,
mm-hmm.
rocket ships, because there's a movie called The Astronaut Farmer where Billy Bob Thornton built his own rocket ship.
I mean, there were certainly, I remember the parts like where the ship captain was tiger eating a cheeseburger, and then a redneck's like space silo like crashes into him.
Yes, that is all that is a throwback to the original conceit of this book, which is abandoned immediately. There's no even attempt to make. But basically, there's this team this superhero team that is supposedly put together to fight astronaut farmers. Or farmer astronauts. But they immediately jump into a fight with John L. Sullivan, who is a boxer from the 20s, who's dead, but he's just alive,
mm-hmm.
with a team of bears. And the main character's head gets punched so much that it gets, like, big and gross.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying.
It's just awful. Just so disgusting. The scenes with him and his wife in bed. Oh my god.
Pretty much everything that he's in.
Yeah.
Well, it's just so preposterously disgusting. I mean, and like, he just has so much fun with it. It just gets worse and worse. He really likes drawing the crooked noses, like going the nose and the mouth going the opposite direction, because he later decides that the cowboy has crooked nose face.
Yes.
Like as he goes along, like I think he looks more normal. I really think that this cowboy guy is, it almost feels like he's making fun of Steve Dillon.
I don't know.
He's kind of got Steve Dillon face.
He does a little bit.
Yeah.
He does a little bit, have a little bit of Dillon face going on. But I don't even know how to describe what happens in this book. There's not really a plot synopsis that works. Mm-hmm. Basically, there's the team, the leader gets his head, like, punched to, like, ridiculous. He's immortal, so he can't die, but his skull gets destroyed, and, like, his head's like a giant, bulbous, mutated, deformed mess. And then it gets split open, and he takes on, like, a ghost cow as his head.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like you do.
Like you do, and then, like, he has problems with his team, and then these people bring in all these other guys, including Carl Winslow, but with gorilla arms.
Gnarled Winslow.
And, I mean, literally, it is Carl Winslow from Family Matters.
Yes.
But with gorilla arms. I mean, literally, that is the character. And he just, it's just, and there's, you know, King Tiger eating cheeseburger. And his son, Admiral Tiger, eating a cheeseburger.
Yes. Tiger eating a cheeseburger. This is, it's just, literally the work of a crazy person.
It's just tons of, like, it's just filled with ridiculous pop culture,
yeah.
Ridiculous constructions of, like, superhero tropes.
The only thing that is even close to being comparable is Axe Cop.
Yes.
And that's written by an insane child. Like, literally is written by an insane child. That is how fucking nuts this book is. Al Capone. Flipped by Al Capone. And everyone says Blitzkrieg. I really like that motif is consistent.
I like that John L. Sullivan appears three times separately. First as a normal guy, even though he's not alive anymore. Then as an undead man. And then as an undead mecha giant robot.
Brought back to life by the power of the mustache.
Exactly. That's God, all it takes.
This page, when his head is all exploded and he's on the ground.
Yes.
Oh, that's so gruesome. And just everything past this is so hard. Like when he stands up and his head's all floppy.
Yes.
God. That's so gruesome. Did you notice that the crab guys that are Admiral Tiger eating a cheeseburger's little yes men?
Mm-hmm.
That like they have a whole crab as a head?
Yes.
Like they don't have a crab head. They have a whole crab with arms and legs.
Yes.
As a head.
But then they have mouths with like teeth.
Yeah. Jesus fuck.
It's crazy. One of my favorite shots in this is Crazy Becky is her name?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that? Yes. She literally chops. She's like crazy sword wielder.
But yeah.
She chops herself into pieces accidentally.
Those are some sharp damn swords.
She just, all her parts fall apart. And I like that. Gnarled Winslow has a crush on Crazy Becky for some reason.
Well, I mean, why not, right?
I guess not. Who cares? He rips off the poor bear's arms and then... It also reminds me of King City a little bit, just because all the puns.
It is on the punny side, is it not?
It's very... There's lots of punniness in this. It's just a ridiculous, inane... It's just completely banal, inane banter between all these... members of these superhero teams. I can't help but love it.
It's pretty delightful. It's horrible, but it's lovely. Bear like, druids.
You like his style? You like his art style?
I think it's gorgeous. I think he's a hell of an artist. He's absolutely out of his gourd.
He draws like ridiculously fast.
Really? Good for him. He's crushing it then. This is really well done.
He's actually redoing. He did another webcomic called Blast Furnace.
Mm-hmm.
He's redrawing a page of that. He's already done the whole thing. Now he's redrawing it. Now that he's better, a page a day, including he's now working he works in doing work on Bedlam and Manhattan Projects.
Is he doing like color and everything page a day?
No. On Blast Furnace? I don't know. I know he's doing all the pencils in it every page a day. I don't think he's doing all... I think he probably... I don't know if he's doing it all the pencils and then going back and recoloring it all at once or whatever. I'm not sure.
I'm just saying that if he could do a page of this in a day and not work like 16 hours, he's a boss. Because this is some tough work, it looks like.
And I mean, half the scenes have like 30 characters on them.
Oh yeah, he's even if he's just doing like just pencils in a day, or he's probably just it's all digital. There's probably no penciling on it. He's just drawing, either Photoshop or Illustrator, probably Photoshop. Just digital inks, like, straight off the bat, and painting on top of it. But even if that's all he's doing in a day, that's still a boatload of work. These are these panels are jam-packed.
I love that there's a lawyer cat wearing a jetpack.
As per usual, your favorite part is the cat.
I need more of her. I need more of the lawyer cat wearing jetpack. Where I need more of that. I want a spin-off comic.
I could do with a little bit less. Yeah, just putting it out there.
What?
What? Less? Just to make you unhappy.
It doesn't make me unhappy, really.
Okay.
But this book is absolutely bonkers. Insane. If you like X-Cop or I get Eric is spot on with that comparison.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're very, I think this came prior to that, but they're both similar in feel, that they're just, you know, inane completely. It does put a lot of, it's really Next Wave, we did Next Wave and talked about how Next Wave completely, like, mm-hmm. makes fun of everything, all the conventions of superheroes. This is like Next Wave times, like, to the 10th power of just even the, like, the ultra violence and the ridiculous infighting. It's like basically making fun of Mark Miller comics, I would say, to even plus with lots of just insane pop culture references, like Carl Winslow, gnarled Winslow,
mm-hmm. like gnarled Sparkly.
Exactly. We want to take this opportunity not just to discuss God Hates Astronauts, even though God Hates Astronauts is pretty great. We are saying go buy it or go read it online. We want to take this chance to, you know, talk about webcomics in general, because this was originally a webcomic that he published, you know, I think page a day or something, or page a week, or, you know, whatever his schedule was.
If he's doing a page a day, I mean, I can't even fathom that.
From what I've heard from other people is that his speed is ridiculous. I don't know.
Good on him.
Yeah. But just talk about how this is, he had drawn this in this format, you know, as a webcomic. You're seeing a lot of this, that webcomics, you know, are probably even more popular than regular comic books at this point, at least in viewers.
Mm-hmm.
More people read webcomics on a day-to-day basis than comic books nowadays, just because it's easy. They're easier to get to and they're free.
Yeah, I think a lot of the thing that people walk away from, you know, going to a comic book store or even using the comics. I mean, superhero comics have really put a stigma over comics, and I think that there's no such thing for a webcomic. It's such a small investment, and it can be about whatever.
Yeah.
So people are, I think, much more willing to invest their time into it. That and people just want to dick around, and comics are a good way to do that.
Yeah. And we wanted to take a chance to maybe discuss how this webcomics in general, and there's, I mean, obviously Thrillment is probably the, in regards to superhero books, or something that is the shifting the media from the set comic book page size to whatever we could think of, and whatever mm-hmm. someone could think of as actual art. And not just, and webcomics in general.
It's pretty interesting that you bring that up first, because both this and Axe Cop, I want to say, were done intentionally in a standard comic book format.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm not going to say that's like super common, but a lot of, when I think of like one of the pioneers of webcomics, I think of Scott Kurtz, who yeah. does PvP, and he was obsessed with like newspaper comics and that sort of thing. And he was actually sort of designing his strips to be printed. You know, and they were in like PC Gamer back when people actually gave a damn about game magazines. But it's interesting that it's shifting away from like making something that's constrained to, you know, being printed to just, you know, he might do like a huge like illustration or, you know, really mix up his, he's pretty structured, but you know, when you think about like how Penny Arcade was always like panel with like the punchline at the end, and now, you know, they might go off and do like a weird storyline about, you know, the robot detective or whatever the scouts were called. Do you know that one?
No.
I can't think of what they're called. They basically came up with a bunch of random ideas and threw it out to their viewers about which one they wanted to see them go through with. They basically wrote comics about all of them. I won't say that these things were done with the intention of being unpublishable in a traditional means, but they were really sort of done around being a different experience. You know,
it's
less about conforming to, you know, like all of them have to match up so you can create a book that's not like ridiculously sized. You don't have to have a bunch of pages that fold out. You know, it's all size to make, you know, sense as a business model, something that you can produce cheaply and sell.
Yes.
Versus like, oh, well, you know, I'm a crazy artist with a website. I'm going to paint a bunch of shit and bam, now it's on the internet. And this one's tiny and this one's huge. And this one, you have to scroll down like, you know, like
40 page links.
Well, I was going to say something in pixels, but 40 page links works. You know, and then you get to the bottom and then there's the punchline.
Yeah.
That
it's an interesting, I don't know, shift, but it's not entirely, I mean, it hasn't, obviously, there's still a lot of people who go publish online who do still adhere to a comic book size page.
I mean, obviously, because
they want to sell it, they want to publish it.
And yeah.
It's interesting conundrum, I mean, when you're presenting this, when you're trying to create art, you know, sequential art in any way, that, you know, that question is going to come up. Like, how are you trying publishing this? Is that a goal?
Mm-hmm.
If it is, it's hard not to, you know, constrain yourself to the typical formatting, because it's very difficult to get it published otherwise. At the same time, you're limiting yourself. You have to work within a certain set size. Layout and panels, there's only so much you can do. I mean,
yeah, you're constrained to the medium.
Yeah.
I mean, and to an extent, you are with web comics. I mean, you can't have colors that are out of gamut for a monitor, by the way, you know, for instance, where you actually can have that in print. You can have like a, you know, like a six color offset press, and you can do four color process, and you can add like two fluorescent colors, you know, something that you can't do with a monitor. That's
true.
That's a constraint that print doesn't have, that online is, I mean, it's in right now with the model that we have, it's impossible to go beyond that gamut.
Yeah, it's true. I think of things like Thrillbent, which are purposefully, I mean, it's a Mark Waid's website. It's his project. He's signed up a lot of different people who do comics on there, and it's a lot of it are superhero comics, but they are not in any way, you know, in the typical comic book page format.
Mm-hmm.
They are like that Batman 66 comic we read, where it's you tap the panel, you know, you tap next, and the next panel shows up. And then you tap it again, and then the text bubbles, the speech bubbles show up, or the narration shows up. And that way you can layer layer the storytelling even more than you could in a print comic where, you know, you are presented with, unless if you want to do that same thing, that means you have to print the same image twice or three times, mm-hmm. layering things each time.
That's just absolutely not practical.
No,
it's not. You can do goofy things like interactive and, animations. You could have GIFs embedded in your comics. You know Zach Gorman?
Yes. His Zelda comic has been floating around.
Yeah, they always do. He's very viral. But he's a great example. And it's all very subtle.
Yeah, it is.
You know, his little animations, but it just gives it that little mm. But it's something that is definitely unique to this new sort of emerging medium.
At a certain point, do you think there will ever be a point when this is not a point of contention for artists, where they have to consider getting published as like a conceit in how they create art? Like, they will structure their panels in a way so that they are in a comic book page, mm-hmm. or another format that is easily publishable in paper. Do you ever think we'll hit a point where that will not even be a thought, where they can just do whatever they want and it is easily as marketable and monetizable?
You know, I think that is a really good question. I don't know that it'll ever get to that point. What it makes me think of, and you're going to like that I'm going to bring this up, is it makes me think of Louis C.K. and how he made all that money off of his independently produced, and how he did his Reddit AMA, and he put it out on his website, and he's like, give me $5, and it's yours, whatever. In most kinds of book publishing, a lot of people can be pretty snotty about self-publishing stuff. And a lot of people that are old school about, being published, with that model as quote unquote making it, they're weird about putting things out this way. So much so that it doesn't surprise me that so many people, like when you think of like Battle Pug, it was a different format, but you'll notice that every page is an identical format because he was from the beginning thinking about publishing it. It's not really like a good option for people to sort of go off on their own and be weird and experimental with their comics, because it's not really a legitimate thing they can make a living on.
Yeah.
You know, it's the fact that, like, people are able to do these things and get their work out there and then, begin to build it to where it makes a living, where we live in a world where PvP and Penny Arcade and God Hates Astronauts and Axe Cop, like, where we live in a world where all these things exist, I mean, it's kind of fascinating, but it's still kind of like winning the lottery. You know, it's not like really a reliable model.
Yeah.
The same way that a comedian couldn't necessarily try and, like, a young comedian couldn't necessarily replicate Louis C.K.'s success.
Yeah, it only worked because he is one of the most popular comedians around.
Yeah, and how do you build that audience? That's the tough thing, and that's like that. That's what
clubs for 10 years and.
I understand that, but like, how did it happen to Penny Arcade? How did it happen to PvP? They have huge, absolutely ridiculous audiences. It's astounding how popular Penny Arcade is. It's astounding how popular XKCD is.
Yeah, I just don't know at what point I don't even know if it'll happen in our lifetimes. Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about like where the whole idea about a comic needing to be published to quote unquote have made it? I don't understand. Yes. Well, even that
you don't necessarily have to publish for not even necessarily that you have to publish to make it quote unquote. Mm-hmm. The fact that if it is, it becomes a question. How do I structure my comic book? If I'm writing a webcomic or anything that's sequential story art, you know, however you want to describe it. I think it's still a question in people's minds when they're making it, how do they format it? You know, like Penny Arcade was panel, 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 like you said. Or both God Hates Astronauts and Warren Ellis's book he did online called Freak Angels. He did that all for free, but that was all in standard comic book size. Mm-hmm. He could have drawn it. And Warren Ellis is one of the most popular comic book writers, and he has enough sway. I think he could have had something published easily in an alternate size paper if he wanted to. Like, I think a publisher would probably have taken him up on it, considering his stuff usually sells on his name alone. When does it become even a question? If that question, how long is that question going to be there? Like, when you're entering your mind, oh, I'm going to do this in a comic book size page because I want to get this published in paper, or I'm not going to try and get this published in paper, so I'll do it in a different. I'm curious if we'll ever hit a point where that's not a question at all. You just go, I want to create this story, I'm going to tell it this way. And I know I can at least, I don't know, make a living off.
Well, I don't know that, to be perfectly frank, it's a bleak thing to say, but really neither one of these ways is really a legitimate plan, given the number of people that want to be comic book artists.
Yes.
And the actual number of people that become, like, comic book artists that can live and that make a comfortable living. Not even, like, a great living. You know, it's very similar, I'd say, to the number of people that, think of all the people that you know that say, oh, I'd love to write novels. You know? And maybe they wrote one and submitted it and it was rejected and, you know, they wait tables for a living or whatever.
Yeah.
It's very comparable.
Yeah, I know. I'm just, I don't know.
I think it's fascinating that it even exists, you know.
That's true.
That it's even, that someone can, the tools are even out there to build an audience and then bring them, you know, your product in a way that you might actually be able to make a living off of it. That's democratization of that publishing model. You know, that's taking something that was a huge investment, you know, mm-hmm. printing presses, and it can cost like $10,000 or $20,000 for a relatively small run of books, you know? Mm-hmm. Paper and labor and setting up the job and having someone, I mean, even to do it badly can cost you that much. Where, you know, I can draw a page in a day and a half and build a website with WordPress. Like, there are plugins for WordPress, Comic Press. Mm-hmm. You can have a web comic in 2 hours if you're slow. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's exciting that this even exists, even if it's not necessarily a viable way to make a living as an artist.
Mm. That's true. That's very true. And I mean, it is any kind of success in comics or web comics mm-hmm. is incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
The people you hear about are the one in a million shots who broke through.
Well, I mean, and it's it's not just winning the lottery either. I'm sure these people have hustled.
Oh, there's tons of. I mean, it's just I'm not saying they don't work hard.
No, they absolutely have to. I have a lot of contempt for the guys at Penny Arcade, but there's no doubt in my mind that they've been putting out content for many years, and they've been really smart about their business. There's no two ways about that. They've gotten incredibly lucky, and they basically got there first in terms of webcomics. They found the Penny Arcade shaped hole in the world and filled it, and have been very hardworking and smart on top of that.
Yeah,
and they're dicks.
I was gonna say that, not that they don't work hard. Most of the people who are successful artists or writers in the comic book industry work incredibly hard for relatively low pay.
Oh God, yeah.
And
young artists are always taken advantage of.
Yeah, I'm just saying that there's as many of those who are successful, quote unquote, have work. There are many, many others who work just as hard and have nothing.
Yes.
No recognition. So, I mean, that's the recognition alone is incredibly hard to get.
Yeah, people are... You know, I actually had someone, like, come to me and say they would pay me $20 a page to illustrate their comic.
$20?
$20 a page.
That's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, considering, like, I think it's pretty standard to take, like, an 8-hour day to illustrate one page. You can math that yourself. That's an at-home activity. That's not very good. And that is
there's a good post, Scotty Young. You know Scotty Young?
Vaguely
familiar. He does the Oz comics for Marvel.
Okay. I exactly know what you mean.
Yeah, and I mean, most people who read comics at least know about the Oz comics. And he does tons of variant covers for Marvel all the time. So, I mean, if you don't know him through the Oz comics, a lot of people know him just through that. He's swamped all the time with work. Like, I follow him on Tumblr and Twitter and stuff. I mean, as most artists who work for Marvel or DC or any of the big publishers, they are working all the time because they have to keep up and to make a living. And he still, like, I posted this on my Tumblr recently, he still gets requests from people to draw their stuff for him for free.
Yep.
For free.
And I think that there's a couple of reasons for this. One is people just do not value artwork enough. I mean, they just don't look at it in terms of this is going to be done by a person. It's going to take them 120 hours. So it's going to be like $1 an hour. That's fair. Or maybe 50 cent an hour. You know, that's what's in people's minds. I mean, but beyond that, some people just have to do it as a business decision that, you know, I've got this product. I think I can sell it for this much. You know, I can only make this much margin, and I can only give this percentage of it to the artist.
Yeah.
And
they need to charge more.
They can charge more, but that doesn't mean that someone's going to pay it.
No.
That consumer on the other end, it has to be priced in a way that consumer or the person that's selling it to that consumer can make money. There's this whole chain of it. You know, coming from the t-shirt printing business, we might only be able to sell a t-shirt for, you know, like we might sell a shirt for as a shirt, you know, an absurdly cheap price, you know, so they can turn around and sell it for $17, $18. Well, I mean, they can't charge $25, $30, so we can make more. And they can make their margin just because the person at the end is going to look at it and be like, this costs too much. I'm not paying for it.
Yeah. And that just brings us brings us back to people don't value art.
And I really wonder where that comes from. You know?
Not sure.
Like, is it, are artists just so willing to debase themselves? Like, there's just so many people wanting to make art and make a living.
I think that's a lot of it, though. I think that's a big part of it.
I mean, it clearly.
That, I mean, people just are, there's a lot of people who, you know, that the artist lifestyle is kind of, you know, idealized, even though it's, any successful artists work harder than most people with 9-to-5s.
Mm-hmm.
And they, a lot of the time, to get noticed at all, a lot of people think they can, they have to work for free.
Yeah.
Or give away their work just to get exposure. But again, Scotty Young, in that same post that I was just talking about, he says, if someone asks you to, if someone asks you to do something for them for free, for, do art for them for free, any kind of art, for exposure, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
Twitter is free, Facebook is free, Tumblr is free. Do it yourself. Do something you own if you're going to do something for free.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
I'm not sure where how we got to this point.
I think it's been a lovely conversation.
But I find it interesting that I'm just curious. I'm wondering how long print comics are going to be the established default setting for reading comics.
And when are people going to be making comics exclusively for tablets?
Yeah.
For instance.
Yeah. It won't be anytime soon.
Maybe not. Trees might go extinct. You don't know.
That's true. Trees go extinct, I think we'll have bigger problems.
Possibly.
Than what we're printing comic books on.
Hey, man, Daddy's got to have his Spider-Mans.
That's true.
Or his superior foes of Spider-Man.
Spider-Man? That was a Nerd Boy Book Club, and as well as our discussion about webcomics springing from it. We did, again, that was God Hates Astronauts from Ryan Brown, a delightful comic book about a guy's head getting exploded and replaced with a ghost cow head. You can get it in trade, hardcover, or for free on GodHatesAstronauts.com. I would definitely suggest picking it up. Where else are you going to see bears using super-powered star rings to fight for a superhero with a ghost cow head?
God, when he eats the cheeseburger and it all plops out the back of the severed cow head. That was some thoroughly disgusting shit.
Yeah, it's a lot of gross-out stuff in it. But I think that brings us to a close.
Yep, lock it up.
That was episode 28. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on iTunes Handsome Boys Comics Hour. We are the only people you'll find under that name. Subscribe to us. Leave us reviews if you enjoy our work. We really appreciate it, honestly. Every time I get any kind of feedback from somebody, it really makes me feel a lot better about all the work that we put in. You can email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. You can Twitter at us at HBCHour. We also on Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com, and we're on Facebook. So it's facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. Like us there, and I put up posts there all the time and link articles and stuff. Give us ideas about what we're reading for the week and what we're going to discuss and all that stuff. You can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Cheryl. That's MixmasterCereal. And I'm also on Tumblr at the same name. Eric, where can they find you and your things online?
I have no such things.
What?
There is no internet. It's just a
what?
Lie.
What are we talking on?
Yes, that's right. You can find my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com and see many of the things I get up to online on this not real internet at ericzgoodnight.com. And from there, you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example.
And I think we had decided that we were doing Sandman's Volume 1 and 2 for next week.
That's exciting. We're
going to go through the entire thing. A couple volumes a week, I think that's the plan. And starting off next week, Sandman by Neil Gaiman, Volume 1 and 2 for Nerdbug Book Club. So read ahead. You can listen in on the discussion and get, you know, where we're coming from. But until next week, have a good one.
Rock and roll. We don't fuck around with the mail.